Now, in black and white, a shield appears with the initials WB and the inscription, Warner Brothers Pictures Presents. Titles appear: Humphrey Bogart as Frank McLeod, Edward G. Robinson as Johnny Rocco, Lauren Bacall as Nora Temple in Key Largo. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH, Boston. Described by Brian Gould. Read by Peter Haydu. Funded by the United States Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203. More titles, with Lionel Barrymore as James Temple and Claire Trevor as Gay Dorn. Screenplay by Richard Brooks and John Huston. Based on the play by Maxwell Anderson. Copyright 1948. Music by Max Steiner. Produced by Jerry Wald. Directed by John Huston. Now words scroll across a black and white screen. At the southernmost point of the United States are the Florida Keys, a string of small islands held together by a concrete causeway. Largest of these remote coral islands is Key Largo. Now, on a long causeway stretching between two islands, a bulbous black police cruiser races up beside a passenger bus. As both vehicles reach the island, the bus pulls to the side of the road. The police car stops in front of it, and two officers get out. In the first seat of the bus sits a handsome middle-aged man. He watches as one officer enters the bus and the other comes to the driver's window.
Hi. Hello, Eddie.
Hi, Ben. What gives?
We're looking for a couple of Indians broke out of jail.
The bus is crowded with Indians.
Young bucks in fancy shirts. If you see anything of them, telephone my office at Palm Grove.
Okay.
The policemen leave. The bus driver turns to the man in the front seat.
Those Indians they're looking for must be from around here. They always head for home.
Home being Key Largo.
The man has black hair, a high creased brow, and dark, thoughtful eyes. The bus travels past palm trees and the ocean. A road sign points to Key Largo. Later, the bus pulls up to the porch of an old hotel. Its signs read, Hotel Largo, Deep Sea Fishing. The man steps off the bus and opens tall screen doors that lead into the lobby, which is decorated with palms and wicker furniture. A man wearing dark clothes with white suspenders, a white tie, and a white fedora reads a newspaper. He watches the bus passenger drop his suitcase, ring the reception desk bell, and fan himself with his hat.
Want something, Jack?
Oh, Mr. Temple around?
He ain't here. Hotel's closed.
When'll he be back?
I don't know.
He returns to his paper. The man from the bus enters the adjoining room, where a large, droopy-eyed man stands behind a bar. A heavyset man with a loosened tie and a slender, dolled-up woman slump on bar stools.
Hello, dear.
The bar is closed.
That's right.
I told you, didn't I? Hotel's closed. In the summertime, everything's closed.
Give him a drink.
No one moves.
Give him a drink. You heard me. Give him a drink.
The bartender opens a bottle.
Turning you said into the beer? Stretch,
it's Lady Bountiful in front by 2.5
Thank you.
Allocate your second think by nothing two of it.
He sits on a stool beside her as she focuses on the radio.
On the outside is running very fast and very hard. It's Lady Bountiful. They haven't caught her yet.
Come on, Lady Bountiful. Come on, Lady Bountiful. Come on! How's that for picking him? Can I pick him or can't I?
They all look to the room board, and the bartender pours a beer.
That's him.
The woman stands unsteadily and reaches for the drink.
I'll take it up.
When he wants you, he'll send for you.
The man in the white hat takes the drink and leaves. She wobbles back to her stool and her score sheet.
All right, fancy free. Carrying 118 pounds, it's a lot of weight. What do you think?
Fancy free.
You play the ponies?
No.
Why not?
I haven't the money.
Oh. Angel, another beer for the gentleman. See, I play the long shots. Betting on a favor, what do you win? When a horse comes in for me, he pays plenty. Take fancy free. Morning line, 12 to 1. Well, that's ridiculous. He should be 4 to 1, even less. Look at that breeding. By chance play out of Misconstrue by Omaha. Of course, he hasn't won on 11 starts. True, but he's been twice in the money, and today he's running a $3,000 claiming race. Ought to be a cinch.
Yes?
What's your name?
McLeod, Frank, by John out of Helen.
I'm Miss Dawn. Miss Gay Dawn.
You. He wants you.
Gay's happy smile fades as she fumbles for her purse.
Please, excuse me.
Gay stares into her makeup mirror and puts on lipstick as she stumbles through the lobby. The heavyset man nods toward Frank.
Who's that?
I don't know.
What's he want?
Old man Temple.
Look, mister, if you're thinking of putting up here, the hotel's closed. Won't be open for another month.
What are you doing here?
We're guests.
Yeah, but you just said
we're here by special arrangement.
Well, I don't plan to stay. I just want to see Mr. Temple.
Oh, well, why didn't you say so? He's out by the boathouse.
The three men watch as Frank gathers his coat and hat and walks out a rear door. Outside, an older man in a wheelchair sits on a wooden boardwalk which leads to a small boathouse and dock. A 30-foot fishing boat is moored nearby. In the distance, a much larger yacht lies at anchor. The man faces the ocean as Frank approaches.
Mr. Temple?
Yeah?
My name's McLeod, Frank McLeod.
McLeod, huh? Well, not Major McLeod.
Yes, sir.
Nora!
A young woman looks up from the dock.
Come here. When'd you get here?
A few minutes ago. I'm on my way to Key West.
Did you come on the bus? I saw her stop. Hey, Nora!
Nora rushes over. She's tall, thin, and has blonde hair swept away from her stately features.
This is George's wife. This is Major Frank McLeod.
How do you do, Mr. Temple? Your husband and I were in the same outfit overseas.
As if she didn't know.
I wrote you a letter, Major, to St. Louis. It was sent on to Portland, St. Paul, and Memphis. All those places before I came back.
Ever been down here before?
No, sir. George was right. The Keys are different than anything I've ever seen, and hotter.
Don't look for it to get any cooler before November. The thermometer will go down to about 100, the sand flies and mosquitoes will disappear, and it'll be right livable for about 3 months on the Keys, except for the tourists.
Frank smiles.
That Black Cedar's Rock?
How do you know?
One has never been here. I know a lot about these Keys. They were a favorite subject with George.
He used to dig for pirate gold right over there. He never lost hope of finding Blackbeard's own treasure. He must have dug 10,000 holes.
Ever find anything?
Oh, sure. Salt water every time. How long are you going to be with us, Major?
Oh, an hour or so.
An hour? Well, you can spare more time than that. Surely we got a lot to talk about.
I'll talk as long as you like, Mr. Temple.
Good, then you'll stay overnight. He can have George's room.
Yes, Dad.
Nora gazes at Frank, then leaves.
Can I help you?
Yeah, if you will, please.
Afternoon, Mr. Temple.
Frank turns Mr. Temple's chair as the two policemen from the bus approach.
Mr. Temple, any news of the Osceola brothers?
Oh, I'm sorry, Ben. I want you to meet my son's commanding officer, Major McLeod.
How do you do?
Officer Ben Wade, Sawyer.
How do you do?
If you don't mind, Mr. Temple, we'd like to have a look around.
Well, you won't find those Indians because they ain't here. Maybe they're in the mangrove swamps.
Maybe.
Or maybe if you want to go wading, you might find them. Maybe. But if I was you, I'd save myself the trouble. No doubt they'll give themselves up before morning.
Well, they sure enough ought to. That's a fact, Mr. Temple. Because the longer they stay at large, the tougher it's going to be on them. Cool Indians. 30 days to do and they bust out.
Well, 30 days in jail for an Indian is like 30 years to somebody else.
Anyway, I'd like to have a look around.
Now, look here, Clyde. If Mr. Temple says they ain't here, they ain't. His word's good enough for me and it ought to be good enough for you. Sorry to bother you, Mr. Temple. Come on, Clyde.
Wade and Sawyer leave.
Those two brothers and my boy George grew up together. There's no harm. They just went to Palm Grove and got a little snootful and started to take Florida back for the Indians.
Came they entered the bar.
Succeeding, too. And I sent word for them to come in and give themselves up. Not that I'm supposed to know where they are, you understand. Oh, Major, I want you to meet Mr. Bass.
Got to see him.
We've already met.
my son's commanding officer overseas.
Yeah?
They were in the Italian campaign together, from Salerno to Cassino.
Yeah.
Yeah, my boy George was killed in Cassino.
Yeah?
Upstairs, Nora watches the heavyset man shove Gay into a room and lock the door. Frank hurries upstairs as Mr. Temple rolls to the bottom of the staircase.
What's going on here?
Nothing, Mr. Temple.
What's the matter with her? Nora! Nora!
Yes, Father.
What ails that girl? She hurt?
Case of one too many, that's all, Mr. Temple.
Now, look here. If you people can't behave yourselves, you gotta leave.
What did you hit her for?
I'll let you in on something. She's a lush, the lady. After she bends the elbow a few times, she begins to see things. Rats, roaches, snakes, bats, you know. Socking a kiss is the only thing that'll bring her out of it.
Nora turns to Frank.
Your room's ready, Major.
Frank follows her into a bedroom.
How long have they been here?
Not when Curly and the woman showed up first. Dad Temple told them we were closed for the summer, but he offered to rent the whole hotel for a week. So much money, Dad couldn't afford to turn it down. Mr. Brown and the others arrived in that big boat 4 days ago.
Now, which one is Brown?
He's a number 11. He never comes out of his room except at night.
Now, what's he like?
He's a lady killer, I think so. Rich, I guess, from the way the others jump when he lifts a finger.
Out of season in this heat. Why would they decide to sit down on Key Largo?
They'll be leaving here tonight or tomorrow.
Her face softens.
Major, were you with George when he died?
Yes.
Was he in very much pain?
He never knew what hit him.
I was afraid he might have suffered. Come down to Dad's room when you're ready, Major.
Nora leaves the room. She wears a white blouse with a long flowing skirt which accentuates her thin waist. She notices the slick-haired, heavy-set Curly as he exits a bedroom. He chews gum and casually strolls by her into Frank's room. Frank spots him in the bathroom mirror. Curly follows Frank as he buttons up a fresh shirt and descends the stairs leading down to the bar.
Excuse me. Stay tonight, huh? I'm Curly Hoff. I heard about how you were with old man Temple's son in Italy. The kid got it, huh? Ah, too bad. I hope you didn't take offense the way we handled you downstairs. You caught Toots and me at a bad time. We were ready to bite anybody's head off, especially a certain blonde's. Look, five of us. We come down here for the deep sea fishing all the way from Milwaukee. More than a year we've been planning it to come down here and fish our brains out. So what happens? One guy brings a blonde, and after we all swore up and down no dames, but he's got to bring her, this guy. Well, if she isn't drunk and crying, she's got a hangover and arguing. One minute she gets sore at you and won't talk to you at all. The next she's making a play for you right in front of the guy. And he gets sore at us, mind you, not her. Everything's spoiled, including our dispositions. It's cost us all this dough, and for what? The world's worst time. Now I ask you, can you blame us for getting rude?
No, I don't blame you.
How about a little drink, pal?
Not right now, thanks.
Hotel Largo.
Come on, just to show there's no hard feelings.
No, thank you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Nora turns to the others.
Storm signals are up.
What does that mean?
Hurricane's on its way.
See what I mean? Hurricanes yet.
Dad's in here, Major.
They enter Mr. Temple's study. A picture of his uniformed son sits on his desk.
Sit down, Major.
The war's over, Mr. Temple. I'm not a major anymore.
Oh, I know the men that win it don't like talking about the war, and I don't like imposing on you. But this letter here from the War Department is the only facts we have, and, well, it leaves us in the dark about a few things.
Well, I'll tell you everything I know, Mr. Temple.
Will you, Frank? Will you? I'd be most grateful.
Where shall I start?
Anywhere.
Well, he was a good soldier, Mr. Temple, from start to finish. You'd have been proud of him, like every man in his regiment was.
Were they, Frank?
And with good reason. It wasn't just a matter of doing his duty. He was always looking for a way to do more and finding it. George was a born hero, Mr. Temple. He couldn't imagine his death, only dishonor.
Of course not.
It's a wonder he lasted till Cassino.
When you believe like George believed, maybe dying isn't very important.
Once outside San Pietro, George and a couple of others established a forward observation post. They got a direct hit and the others were killed. I left it up to George. For 3 days and three nights, he stayed awake, directing our fire. Most of that time, I was on the other end of the line. To keep himself awake, he talked into the phone. Talked and talked. Most of his talk was about you two. You'd be surprised how much I know about you both. For instance, inside your wedding ring, Nora, there's an inscription. Evermore.
That's right.
And you, Mr. Temple, you remember telling George what this hollow is above the upper lip? Before he was born, you said, he knew all the secrets of life and death. And then at the moment of his birth, an angel came and put his finger right here and sealed his lips.
Temple smiles.
I remember that. Yep. He couldn't have been more than 7 years old when I told him that fairy story. What's it like where he's buried?
Just crosses on a slope. High up is what's left of a church. You can see a river from where George is.
I'd like to pay a visit to that place. Yeah, I would. Nora, maybe we'll do just that. Go to Italy and see where George is buried. It belongs to us, don't it? That plot of ground.
He extends his hand.
I'm very grateful to you, Frank. Thank you.
The men share a heartfelt handshake. Nora opens the window and closes a banging shutter.
There was a storm warning, Dad.
You better see to the bolt here.
Frank's drooping eyes linger on the old man. He slides the door open and leaves the room. Nora closes the window and follows, leaving Temple staring meditatively in the darkened room. Outside, Frank and Nora return to the boardwalk and head toward the dock. As he checks the threatening sky, Nora glances at his lean, seasoned face.
What brought you down this way, Frank?
Oh, I liked the sea and thought maybe I'd like to make my living on it.
Doing what?
Doesn't matter. Hand on a fishing boat. Life on land's become too complicated for my taste.
What did you do before the war, Frank?
I was circulation manager for a newspaper.
You never went back to it?
Yes, but I couldn't stick it. I've done a lot of things since I left the paper. Driving taxis, waiting on table, anything to make a dollar, including day labor.
Curly and another man appear.
Getting kind of rough. Major, this is Mr. Feeney.
Hi, pal. How do you do?
Frank and Nora pull in the boat's mooring line.
How's your ground tackle off the stern?
Plenty heavy.
Well, then we better just double up on these bow lines.
Frank lifts two coils of rope and steps into the fishing boat's bow.
Where'd you learn about boats?
My first sweetheart with the boat.
Curly motions to the huge motor yacht further out.
Hey, how do you like that boat?
Nice craft. She ought to be away from those reefs with this blow coming up.
Is that so?
The men notice two rowboats nearing the dock and walk away. Frank coils a length of rope and tosses it to Nora.
Got on that piling over there.
Nora slides the rope around a wooden piling. As Frank skillfully works with the ropes, Nora runs her fingers through her hair and watches him admiringly. He tosses her the final line and ties it off at his end. Frank yanks on a mooring rope to pull the boat in close and steps onto the dock beside Nora. Nora looks out at the water and waves to the rowboats.
Charlie Winoka and his family, Crawfish Island. The Winokas are royalty. Charlie's a prince of the Seminole Nation. His ancestors go back to the gods. He sells seashells by the seashore.
Frank smiles. In each of the rowboats, a father rows his family to the dock. In one, a boy bales water with a bucket. As Frank and Nora walk down to greet them, she notices two young men in fancy striped shirts piloting a motorized canoe behind the others. Frank bends to help an old woman off a boat. Her weathered face is crisscrossed by deep wrinkles.
Hello, Mama Joby. Every Indian around here is a descendant of Mama Chobie. She admits to being 108 years old, but she has a son who's 112, so we suspect Mama doesn't tell the truth about her age.
He's not a human present.
Him, new husband? No, Mama, not your husband.
We got together.
Huh?
We got together.
Oh.
Frank takes a cigarette from his pack. The old woman places it between her creased lips, and he lights it for her. She takes a drag.
Pretty big blow coming, Mama?
Pretty big.
They help her across the dock. Then Nora embraces a young girl.
The Indians always know. Don't ask me how, but they do. More'll be along. They always come to us from as far as Matacumbe Key. This one was born in our hotel lobby during the last big blow, weren't you?
Yes.
She turns to greet the two young men.
Hello, Tom. Hello, John. Tom and Johnny Osceola, Frank.
How are you do?
How do you do?
Hello.
How are you?
We get Mr. Temple message. We here give ourselves up to police.
He thinks it's the best thing.
What Mr. Temple say we do. Him good friend to Indian.
Why don't you go on over to the hotel and Dad'll call Palm Grove.
Thanks, Miss Nora.
While the others gather some bundles, the young men walk up to the dock leading to the hotel. Frank and Nora follow.
Poor fellas, they got into some trouble and were arrested.
Yes, I know. Mr. Temple told me about them.
They really trust Dad Temple, all the Indians. As far as they're concerned, he's the United States of America.
You're very happy here, aren't you?
Very.
You're never lonely?
She shakes her head.
George tell you I met him at a USO dance. He was lonesome. He wanted company. I was working at a defense plant. I knew lots of people, but I was lonesome, too. Before George, my life hadn't made much sense. I never had much of a home, and I didn't like what I had. George gave me roots. When he went overseas, I came down here to stay with his father, and roots took hold. Now I'm like one of those mangroves.
Rain starts to fall, and they dash to the hotel. They spot a squad car parked outside.
Our local police always get their Indian. You close the shutters while I get the oil lamp.
Nora walks into the bar and picks up two glass oil lamps from a table. Outside, Frank closes shutters on the large windows. Nora stiffens as she passes Angel, the man who was serving drinks. He smokes a cigarette and watches her place a lantern on the bar. Frank closes more shutters and the room darkens. Nora switches on a light. Feeney stands in front of her, fanning himself with his hat. Close by, Curly eyes her carefully while the man in the white fedora reads a magazine. Frank closes two storm doors and walks inside. Curly smiles casually at him.
Hey, pal. Getting ready for the hurricane, ain't you? How's about joining me for that little drink now?
No, thanks.
You're not a drinking man?
No, not right now.
Hey, Curly, what all happens in a hurricane?
The wind blows so hard, the ocean gets up on its hind legs and walks right across the land.
They're singing a song. Rain, rain, go away. Little Ralphie wants to play.
Temple's study door opens.
Isn't that Ben Way's car? Nora, have you seen him?
No, Dad, I haven't.
There's a good one. They're snooping around looking for these two boys, and here they are.
Better go out there and sit in his car and wait for him.
You're better yet, go and find him.
The Osceola brothers walk out to the car.
What's so funny, Tuts?
Two cons in the cell, see? And one con is trying to sell the other one a fountain pen. And he says this pen is guaranteed for life.
Curly stares back.
What's the matter? Don't you get it? A con. Guaranteed for life.
Now, we get it, all right.
Have you seen Wade or Sawyer anywhere around, Frank?
No, sir, I haven't.
His car's out there in the rain.
Yes, I know.
Funny.
How about a drink, everybody? What'll it be, Miss Temple?
Nothing, thanks.
How about you, Pop?
He's not supposed to drink anything.
That leaves it up to you, pal.
Another time.
What's the matter? Don't you like me? I'm beginning to think I got smallpox or something. Are you still laughing at that stinking joke?
Hey, here's another one. Elevator's busting through a roof, see? And the elevator boy is saying to a couple of passengers, I told you there was no 11th floor.
Explain it first, Tuts.
Wise guy.
Ralph Feeney watches Nora light an oil lamp.
What's the idea of them?
They shut the electricity off. We still have light.
I hear that a hurricane blows off roofs, uproots trees, and puts the snatch on people, and they all go flying around the sky together. Is that right?
Absolutely.
It's raining in on Ben's car. You better close the windows, Nora.
Ralph, go put up the windows in that car.
What, and get caught out in that hurricane? Not me, brother.
I'll take it.
Nora glares at Curly, and Frank looks up from his cigarette.
Don't you answer it.
Curly confidently strides to the phone beside Nora.
Yes? No, Mr. Temple's not here now. No, she's not here either. Me? I'm a guest at the hotel. No, we haven't seen him.
Give me that phone.
He yanks the phone away.
Yes, if Sawyer shows up, I'll have him call you right back.
Nora grabs for the phone and Curly shoves her. As Frank rushes over, Curly and Toots pull out pistols.
Easy does it, soldier.
Upstairs, a man lies in a bathtub and reads a newspaper. A fan blows away smoke from a fat cigar clenched in his wide mouth. Deep creases lead from both sides of his nose to his broad, frowning lips. He takes a drink, then stands, his dark, baggy eyes fixed as he listens intently. The short, stout man steps out of the bath and towels off. Reflected in the mirror, Curly and Frank stand in an adjoining room. Curly enters and closes the door.
The phone rang and the girl started for it and I stopped her. The soldier wants to get rough, so we show up our rods. I'm glad that old man's in a wheelchair. He'd be lots of trouble.
Who is on the phone?
The law.
Now that means he won't be long.
Then what?
We'll see.
The boss chews his cigar as Curly helps him put on a silk bathrobe.
I think this rain will cool things off, but it don't. Gonna have a hurricane, are we?
So they say.
On a bed, the young officer lies unconscious. The boss slaps his face. Blood covers his forehead. He stirs, but doesn't come to. The boss stops in a doorway and raises his thick, arched eyebrows. His heavy, protruding brow wrinkles as he surveys the room. Toots holds a pistol on Frank, Nora, and Mr. Temple. Frank studies the boss's face while Temple leans forward in a wicker chair.
Are you thieves or what? Do you want money? Is this a robbery?
That's right, Pop. We're going to steal all your towels.
That big gun in your hand makes you look grown up. You think? I'll bet you spend hours posing in front of a mirror, holding it, trying to look tough.
Shut up.
You scum.
Toots.
Toots straightens up.
Tell him to stop calling me names.
Now, shut up, Toots.
The boss walks to the center of the room.
Now, listen. I don't want any trouble. With you? With anybody? Now, how's about it? Going to act sensible?
Why are they pointing those guns at us?
Now, look, Pa, forget the questions. What you don't know won't hurt you. We'll be out of here in a couple of hours. Try to put up with us that long, huh?
He points to Nora.
What are we going to eat tonight, sister? Pompano, maybe?
Am I to understand we're your prisoners?
Well, put it this way, Pop. You're going to be my guest for a little while.
He turns to Frank.
You know, back in Cheyenne, the old days, we used to pay $8-$10 for an order of Pompano. We used to fly it in. The way they served it. Done up in a brown paper bag. Got any champagne, miss?
Angel shrugs.
No champagne.
Oh, that's too bad. Champagne and Pompano. They really go together.
Toots looks into the bedroom.
This one's coming around.
The young officer sits up and hangs his head.
Still feel tough?
Toots watches him rise and stagger to the door. Temple sees him and leans forward.
Sawyer!
Blood stains Sawyer's forehead. His clothes are disheveled and his holster is empty.
You won't get away with it, Rocco.
Toots kicks Sawyer's leg and he falls to the floor. Nora rushes over. Frank intently watches Rocco, the boss.
Why'd you hurt that boy?
He's a cop, that's why.
Well, who are you? Why are you here? Answer me!
Stop hollering, old man.
Johnny Rocco, of course.
He scowls at Frank.
Hot water.
Rocco looks down at Sawyer and turns to Toots.
Get some.
Rocco looks Frank in the eye.
Yeah, that's right. Johnny Rocco.
I know that name.
Sure, Pop. Who doesn't?
Johnny Rocco, the gangster, Mr. Temple. The one and only Rocco.
Rocco? Rocco?
What's that, Pop? I'm kind of deaf.
Rocco!
Oh. He said Rocco.
They threw you out of the country.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. After living in the USA for more than 30 years, they call me an undesirable alien. Me, Johnny Rocco. Like I was a dirty red or something.
Then how could you be here?
Well, maybe I'm not, Pop. This ain't real, what's happening. You're having a dream.
Wake up, Pop. You're snoring.
You're right. You shouldn't have been deported. You should have been exterminated.
Rocco, I must apologize for Mr. Temple. He doesn't know what he's talking about or who to.
Sir?
Johnny Rocco was more than a king. He was an emperor. His rule extended over beer, slot machines, the numbers racket, and a dozen other forbidden enterprises. He was a master of the fix. Whom he couldn't corrupt, he terrified. Whom he couldn't terrify, he murdered.
You filth. You city filth.
Oh, Mr. Temple, you're hopelessly old-fashioned. Your ideas date back years. You're still living in the time when America thought it could get along without the Johnny Roccos. Welcome back, Rocco. It was all a mistake. America's sorry for what it did to you.
On the level, boss. Were you that big?
On the level? Are you that dumb?
Yeah. Yeah, that's me. Sure, I was all of those things. And more. When Rocco talked, everybody shut up and listened. What Rocco said went. Nobody was big as Rocco. It'll be like that again, only more so. I'll be back up there one of these days, and then you're going to really see something.
If the time ever comes when your kind can walk a city street in daylight with nothing to fear from the people.
The time has come, Mr. Temple is here.
Okay. You know all about me. Now, what's with you, wise guy? Well, give. In the war, weren't you?
Yes.
Get any medals?
Couple.
Brave, huh?
Not very.
Why'd you stick your neck out?
No good reason.
What are you saying, Frank?
I believed some words.
Words? What words?
Well, they went like this. But we are not making all this sacrifice of human effort and human lives to return to the kind of a world we had after the last World War. We're fighting to cleanse the world of ancient evils, ancient ills.
What's that all about?
I remember those words.
That makes two of us.
We rid ourselves of your kind once and for all. You ain't coming back.
Who's gonna stop me, old man?
If I wasn't a cripple,
you wouldn't be talking this way. Right, Pop?
Temple hoists himself out of the chair and leans on a table.
You're sick of Pop.
Stand your ground.
Stand your ground. You're killing me, Pop.
Come on. Come on, Pop. You're not quitting, are you?
My boy George never quit. I ain't.
That's the spirit, Pop. Never say die.
The old man swings wildly at Rocco and crashes to the floor. Frank bends to help him. Nora storms toward Rocco, punches his chest, and scratches his face. Rocco easily grabs her arms and forces a kiss on her lips.
Little wildcat. Smell blood, huh? Got your appetite up, huh?
Ralph opens the door.
Hey, boss. Miami wants you on the phone.
Rocco looks Nora in the eye, grins devilishly, and slowly lets her go. She takes hold of her father's arm and helps Frank maneuver him into a chair. Downstairs, Rocco dabs a handkerchief at his scratched cheek.
The whole bunch of people out on the porch look like Indians.
What do they want?
They want in.
What for?
The hurricane.
I keep them out. Hello? Yeah, this is Mr. Brown. Hello. Oh, hello, Ziggy. How are you? I recognize your voice, yeah. Well, swell hearing it again. How's every little thing?
Maybe it's the law.
Well, show them in. Well, that's swell. This end, too. Look, when are you coming down? What hurricane?
At the door, a man in a rain-soaked slicker stands in front of a crowd of Indians. Ralph stops him.
I want to see the boss.
It's the skipper.
Rocco waves him in.
Well, look, you're only a couple of hours away. You can beat the hurricane out. No, it's got to be tonight. Yeah, see you in a couple of hours. Bye.
Storm warning. Big blow on the way.
So what?
This coral reef, not safe. Got to make for deep water right away.
That boat stays right here.
Too dangerous. What break up on reef?
I tell you when to move that boat.
I am skipper.
Rocco grabs his collar.
I paid you. Now you do what I say.
Please, senor. You want half money back, I give. But got to move boat.
Give me your rod.
He points a pistol.
See this? You move that boat, I'll blow your brains out.
Okay.
Rocco releases his grip.
We'll be out of here in a couple of hours.
I'll be ready.
Upstairs, the others listen to Sawyer.
I come back here looking for those Osceola boys. I knew they were somewhere around here. Down the lobby, I ran up against these two. Well, they didn't look right to me, so I asked them a few questions. By the way they answered me, I knew there was something fishy. So I put in a call to Ben Wade, but before I could get through, the lights went out on me. I woke up in there. Rocco was standing over me. I recognized him right away from pictures. I made a break for the door, and the lights went out again. I'm the electrician.
Rocco enters, turns on the lights, and closes the door. He puffs pensively on his cigar and glances at Angel.
Angel.
Sheriff.
What did Miami have to say?
Everything's okay.
How soon will they be down?
They were leaving right away.
Rocco eases into a chair, puts his feet up, and blows out smoke.
How you feeling, copper? I'll say one thing, you sure can take it. By the way, Toots poured it on, I'm surprised you ever woke up.
Angel lathers Rocco's face and unfolds
sure
a straight
hot.
Razor.
Not too close. So I won't get away with it, huh? How many times I heard that from dumb coppers, I couldn't count.
I still say it.
He'd give you a left eye to nail me, wouldn't you? Huh? You'd see the headlines, can't you? Local deputy captured Johnny Rocco. Your picture would be in all the papers. You might even get the tell on the newsreel how you pulled it off.
He motions wildly under the razor.
Well, listen, Hick. I was too much for any big city police force to handle. They tried, but they couldn't. Put the United States government a pin a rap on me. Yeah, and they won't make it stick. You hick. I'll be back pulling strings to get guys elected mayor and governor before you ever get a 10-buck raise. Yeah, how many of those guys in office owe everything to me? I made them. Yeah, I made them just like a tailor makes a suit of clothes. I take a nobody, see? Teach him what to say. Get his name in the papers. Yeah, pay for his campaign expenses. Dish out a lot of groceries and coal. Get my boys to bring the voters out. And then count the votes over and over again till they added up right and he was elected. Yeah. And what happened? Did you remember when the going got tough? When the heat was on? No, he didn't want to. All he wanted was to save his own dirty necks. Yeah, that's enough of that. Give me a towel, will you? Yeah. Public enemy, he calls me. Me, who gave him his public, all wrapped up with a fancy bow on it. Angel, lay my clothes out.
What suit?
A gray one.
What color shirt?
A white one, of course.
Rocco notices the scratch on his cheek and smiles at Nora.
Yeah. A little wildcat.
He watches her in a mirror.
I knew one like you a long time ago. Scratch, kick, bit. Regular, hell yeah. She even stuck a knife in me once. Irish kid. Little and kind of skinny she was, but real fireball. Her name was Maggie Mooney. But for professional reasons, I had to change her to Gay Dawn.
She was a knockout in those days.
Rocco slowly steps across the room to Nora. He leans close to her ear and begins to whisper. She stares ahead blankly, her soft lips sealed as Rocco whispers 2 inches from her ear. Frank watches uneasily as Nora turns her back and steps away. Rocco grins as he leans over her shoulder and whispers again. Nora spins around and raises her fists. Rocco holds her arms. Toots violently yanks Temple back by the collar. Nora spits in Rocco's face. Rocco's glaring eyes bulge. Nora turns her head. Frank wraps his arm around Nora and gazes defiantly. Rocco's eyes widen as Frank escorts her to a chair.
Go ahead, boss. Smack her. Get it out of your system.
Look at him. The great Johnny Rocco with Nora's spittle hanging from his face.
Oh, shut up, old man.
Come over here. I'd like to spit on you.
Gimme. Gimme.
Curly hands Rocco his revolver. Frank steps in front of Nora.
Nothing to stop me from wiping you all out.
What good will that do, boss? Forget it. Her kind's a dime a dozen.
I say smack her and let it go at that.
Oh, that'll be right for you, Toots, not for him.
I need your advice. I ask for it.
The Roccos don't, or they wouldn't be Roccos. No, Toots, smacking her isn't enough for such an insult. He'd have to kill her. And he'd have to kill the rest of us because we witnessed it. Not just Mr. Temple and me, but all the witnesses. It's kill us all or nothing. He needs you and Curly and Angel, so it'll be nothing.
Wise guy.
Unlock the door!
Frank sighs as Rocco hands Curly the gun.
Let her out.
Rocco dabs his sweaty face with a handkerchief and walks into the dark bedroom.
I take off my hat to you, soldier. It's a good thing you said what you did when you said it, or he'd have started shooting. Close shave for you folks, closer than the one he got from Angel.
Frank sits heavily on the edge of a table.
Where is everybody? Downstairs?
Gay enters the room, followed by Angel. She smiles and fixes her hair.
Oh. Hello, everybody. Hi, fella.
She strides over to Curly.
Where's Johnny?
He's in there, getting dressed.
I need a drink. What's everybody doing upstairs?
She frowns worriedly at Nora.
Honey. Have you been crying? Why, has somebody been mean to you? Him? Did you make her cry? If you did, you ought to be ashamed. How about a little drink, huh?
No, thanks.
Oh, come on. I'll chase the blues away. No. I'll have one.
The boss said...
I don't care what the boss said. I need a drink. Good evening, Mr. Temple.
Miss.
Got a cigarette?
She takes a cigarette from Frank's pack.
Did your horse win?
My horse? Hmm. Oh, no, I'm afraid he ran out of the money.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She notices Sawyer shifting uncomfortably and Toots polishing his chrome-plated pistol. Her hands begin to shake and she steps uneasily forward.
Oh. I think I'll go to my room. How about it, you? How many times do I have to tell you
that? The boss say you get no more drink.
Oh, he did he? Well, this is a free country. If I want a drink, I can have one. I can buy my own. Yeah.
Sorry. Boss say...
The boss, he can go to...
Rocco enters.
Oh, hello, darling.
How come it's hotter at night than on the day? When it's raining than when it ain't. Huh, wise guy?
I don't know.
You don't know. I thought you knew all the answers. I thought you was a wise guy from way back.
Darling, you've hurt yourself. Your face, how in the world...
He brushes her away and fixes his tie. Nora glances briefly at him.
What's funny?
Nothing.
Why'd you laugh?
I don't know.
Dumbbell. What's worse, Curly? A dumbbell or a wise guy?
A wise guy, I guess.
Got $1 million?
No.
How much?
Nothing.
But you're a wise guy.
Well, you see, I was educated only in impractical things. With you, it's just the opposite.
A window blows open.
I'm afraid. I hate thunder.
Is this it? What is it?
It's the beginning.
I'm afraid.
Well, can cars get through during a hurricane?
Maybe. Maybe not.
I think I'll have a scotch and water, please.
No.
Please, darling.
No.
He turns to Frank.
Now, what you were saying, that's the truth.
Well, you don't believe it. I can see right through you. What you really think is I'm better than Rocco. He's filth, like the old man said. Right?
Right.
He's got a gun, you think, and I haven't. You figure it's the gun.
Well, listen, soldier. Thousands of guys got guns, but there's only one Johnny Rocco.
How do you account for it?
Well, he knows what he wants. Don't you, Rocco?
Sure. What's that?
Tell him, Rocco.
Well, I want,
He wants more, don't you, Rocco?
Yeah, that's it. More. That's right, I want more.
Will you ever get enough?
Will you, Rocco?
Well, I never have. No, I guess I won't. You, do you know what you want?
Yes, and I had hopes once, but I gave them up.
Hopes for what?
A world in which there's no place for Johnny Rocco.
Yeah?
Rocco pulls out his gun and cocks it.
Okay, soldier. Here's your chance.
Give it.
Rocco tosses his gun to Frank and takes Curly's.
Okay, soldier, you can make your hopes come true. But you gotta die for it. See what I'm aiming? Right at your belly. Go ahead, shoot. Get away, sister.
Get away, Nora.
Shoot! All right, you got a gun now. You gonna use it or not?
Kill him, Major.
Yeah, kill him, Major. Go ahead, show him how you're not afraid to die. Shoot!
Frank glares at Rocco and keeps his gun aimed at the floor.
Looks like you don't want it enough, what you want. Betsy laughs when something's funny for a change.
One Rocco, more or less, isn't worth dying for.
He tosses down the gun.
Give me that gun.
No, no, I'm afraid you'd use it. One old man, more or less, isn't worth dying for. What's the matter, sister? You look like you lost somebody near and dear.
Nora lowers her eyes.
A live war hero. Now I know how you did it.
Hey, Curly, Gay, anybody? Want a hero?
Sawyer bolts for the gun and aims it at Rocco.
All right, Rocco. All right. Let you and me play that game now. You can stop me from going out that door, but you gotta die first. If he shoots me, you still get it. Get out of my way.
Toots backs away. Sawyer inches closer to Angel and the door.
Get away from that door!
Angel steps aside. Sawyer backs to the door and steps into the hall. Rocco fires. Sawyer jerks backward and pulls his trigger. Nothing. Rocco calmly fires again. Gay screams. Angel muffles her. Nora grasps her stomach.
The gun wasn't loaded. Didn't have a chance.
Murderer.
Had to do it, old man. Or he would have been out that door and gone.
He's gone now.
That's right, sister. The gun wasn't loaded. But our hero didn't know it.
Rocco and Angel walk into the hall. Rocco picks up the empty pistol, peers down the staircase, and leaves. Mr. Temple turns to Frank.
You knew the gun was empty, didn't you, son? You could tell by the weight.
No, sir, I didn't know.
He just didn't have the nerve, Pop. Let's face it.
You were smart, fella. What happened to him would have happened to you. It's better to be a live coward than a dead hero. Oh, excuse me.
You weren't afraid, son. We all know that.
Oh, yes, I was afraid. But that's not why I didn't pull the trigger. What do I care about Johnny Rocco, whether he lives or dies? I only care about me, me and mine. Rocco wants to come back to America, let him. Let him be president. I fight nobody's battles but my own.
I can't see it your way, Frank.
Sawyer didn't either.
He was a fool. Me die to rid the world of a Johnny Rocco? No thanks.
If I believed your way, I'd want to be dead too. It's true. You are a coward. What you're saying now is only to save your coward's face.
Now, Nora, maybe Frank's right. Maybe he's right.
A flash of distant lightning fills the room as Frank casts them a woeful gaze. Nora turns away, and the scene dissolves to a dark, stormy sea. In a rowboat, Curly struggles against the waves as Angel ties a weight to Sawyer's ankles. They dump Sawyer's limp body into the raging sea. In the lobby, Ralph mops up a bloodstain on the floor. Rocco paces beside him, running a comb through his slick hair. Mr. Temple's wheelchair rests at the bottom of the stairs. Rocco answers the upright candlestick telephone.
Okay. Hey, what's the idea, Sicky? Why ain't you started yet? So what? Huh? What's the matter, you guys? Didn't I take chances? Now listen, I make the run from Cuba, yeah. I risk my neck, my boat, and the shipment, and you won't come out in the rain. Well, you listen to me. Either you show tonight or the deal is off. Well, I know a dozen guys who just break their necks to get their mitts on the shipment. Look, my watch says 8 o'clock. I give you 2 hours. You ain't here by 10, the deal is off. Hello?
The lights dim as Rocco clicks the receiver handle.
Hey.
Upstairs, the room darkens and a window blows open. Frank reaches to pull the shutters closed and the room goes black. Toots opens the door and points with his gun.
Downstairs, everybody.
Gay dashes out the door. In the shadowy darkness, Toots trains his pistol on Frank as he and Nora shoulder Mr. Temple's arms and slowly lift him out of the chair. In the bar, Rocco watches Gay tremble down the stairs in the dim lamplight. She squeezes out a hurried smile as she passes him. Behind the bar, she pours a drink with her shaking hands. As she raises the glass, she sees Rocco approaching in the bar mirror.
Hey. Can I say no drinking?
Oh, please, honey. Just one.
She raises her eyebrows with anticipation. Rocco scowls and she turns to face him. Curly and Angel burst inside.
Bring down the shipment.
Curly hurries upstairs in his soaking wet clothes.
In there.
At the bottom of the stairs, Frank and Nora struggle to seat Mr. Temple in his wheelchair. Rocco grimly approaches his three prisoners.
Someone call him.
There were some Indians at the door. I sent them away.
You're all right.
All right.
They glare at him and move to the bar. Ralph and Toots stay behind.
Listen to it.
The upstairs shutters got to be closed, she said. If they ain't, the roof might come off.
They'll close them.
Rocco strolls across the room toward Gay. He lifts her glass and nods for her to move out from behind the bar.
One thing I can't stand is if Dame is drunk. But I mean, they turn my stomach. No good to themselves or anybody else.
Gay gapes as he empties the drink.
She got the shakes, see? So she has a drink to get rid of them. That one tastes so good, so she has another one. First thing you know, she's stinko again.
You gave me my first drink, Johnny.
Oh, so it's all my fault now. Everybody has their first drink, don't they? But everybody ain't a lush.
If I'd known you was going to act this way, I wouldn't have come here.
I'd have known what you're like. You wouldn't have been asked. 8 years since I seen her.
He moves down the bar and eyes her with disgust.
You wouldn't know it was the same dame.
You certainly haven't changed one bit.
Meaning what?
Nothing. Gee, honey, you're as mean as can be.
mean as can be. Now, what does that remind me of?
Well, don't you remember? That was in a song. She used to sing it.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I gave her a first chance, took her out of the chorus, made her a singer. Mention that while you're at it. Why ain't you a singing star instead of a lush?
See, Johnny, I didn't mean anything.
Yeah, she could have had a future.
That's right, she had everything.
Voice, looks, plenty of class.
I was the rage. Gee, honey.
Now, look, Gay, why don't you give us your old song, huh?
You mean right now?
Yeah.
I can't.
Ah, sure you can.
Please, Johnny, don't make me.
I won't make you do anything. Tell you what, I got a proposition for you. Now, you sing us your song, you can have a drink.
Can I have the drink first?
No, the song, then the drink.
Without any accompaniment?
Now, look, do you want a drink or don't you?
Gay swallows. She meekly nods her head.
All right.
Gay attempts a smile and hesitates. Rocco sits on a bar stool and watches.
Well?
My gowns were gorgeous. Always low-cut, very décolleté. I wore hardly any makeup. Just some lipsticks, that's all. No lights. Just a baby spot. I wouldn't have any entrance. They'd play the intro in the dark and a spot would come on and there I'd be.
Rocco and Curly applaud. Rocco watches as Gay's eyes flick back and forth.
Well, go ahead, sing.
On the verge of tears, Gay takes a deep breath and wiggles her shoulders seductively.
Moaning low, my sweet man, I love him so. Though he's mean as can be. He's the kind of man, he's the kind of woman like me.
Rocco crosses his arms.
Gonna die if sweet man should pass me by. If I die, where'll he be? He's the kind of man needs the kind of woman like me.
She bites her lip.
Don't know any reason why he treats me so poorly. What have I gone and done? Makes my trouble double with his worries when surely I ain't deserving of none.
Curly and Rocco shake their heads in disappointment.
Moaning low, my sweet man is gonna go. When he goes, oh Lordy. He's the kind of man needs the kind of woman like me.
She lunges against the bar.
Oh, give me that drink now, Johnny.
No.
Johnny.
No.
But you promised.
So what?
You said that.
But you were right.
She collapses in a chair and buries her face in her arm. With a furrowed brow, Frank looks from her to Rocco. He stands and calmly walks behind the bar. The others look on as he takes the bottle and pours a drink right under Rocco and Angel's steady gaze. Nora watches him intensely. Frank strides to Gay and hands her the half-full glass. He watches her gulp it down. Rocco squares off in front of Frank with an infuriated stare.
Thanks, fella.
Unfazed by Rocco's slaps, Frank looks to Gay.
You're welcome.
He fires a defiant look at Rocco and walks past him. Gay gapes through tear-streaked eyes. As Frank sits, Mr. Temple and Nora watch him admiringly. Curly ambles over to Toots.
Play a little gin?
Okay.
For how much?
You name it.
Nickel a point.
They take stools at the bar. Angel hands Curly a deck of cards. With wide, nervous eyes, the mobsters listen and watch glasses fall from bar shelves. Rocco stares at the ceiling.
Hey, old man. How bad can you get?
He spins toward Temple.
I ask you a question, do you hear me?
Well, the worst storm we ever had was back in 35. Wind whipped up a big wave and sent it busting right over Matecumbe Key. 800 people were washed out to sea.
How far away was that from here?
A few miles.
Rocco turns from the old man with a dark, nervous frown. He paces into the unlit dining room and stares at the ceiling. Turning, he paces back. Ralph leans on a doorpost and shakes his head.
Listen to it.
Nora and Frank watch as Rocco's shadow passes over them. Frank hangs his head.
I'm sorry about the things I said upstairs. I know they aren't true. Will you forgive me, Frank?
Of course.
He might have killed you, but that made no difference. You had to help her. Your head said one way, but your whole life said another. The other things, maybe they're true. Maybe it is a rotten world. But a cause isn't lost as long as someone is willing to go on fighting.
Well, I'm not that someone.
Rocco paces by.
But you are. You may not want to be, but you can't help yourself. Your whole life's against you.
What do you know about my life?
A whole lot. The way you look and talk and from things George wrote me. Most of his last letter was all about you and him on the phone. Only he had it the other way. You were the one on the hill.
Frank looks away. Rocco continues to pace from the dining room into the bar with his stare fixed on the ceiling. Frank follows his moves with a faint smile. Rocco paces back, listening. More bar glasses fall. Rocco looks to his men, who nervously watch a glass chandelier sway like a pendulum on its post. Beads of sweat fill Rocco's creased, terrified face. Gay follows his moves with clear eyes and tear-stained cheeks. He stops in front of her.
What's the matter with you?
Nothing.
He joins his men at the bar.
Why's everybody so quiet? Go on, talk, why don't you? Well? You, Curly, say something.
What do you want me to say?
Oh, anything, just so it's talk. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm trying to think.
Rocco paces again.
I bet you 2-3 years we get prohibition back.
Go on.
This time we make it stick.
Yeah.
I bet you 2-3 years prohibition comes back. Absolutely, yeah. The trouble was, see, before, I mean, too many guys wanted to be top dog. That was the trouble, yeah. One mob gets to massacring another. The papers play it up big, big, see? So what happens?
So what?
Naturally, the papers play it up big, and the public, they get the idea that prohibition's no good.
Rocco stops, wide-eyed, in front of Mr. Temple.
Prohibition, I mean.
I don't believe it. 800 guys getting washed out to sea. You're a liar! Nobody lived here after a thing like that happened. Were they, Curly?
I remember reading about it in the papers at the time.
A relief train was dispatched from Miami. The barometer was down to about 26 inches when that train pulled in the homestead. Engineer backed his string of empty coaches into the danger zone, and the hurricane hit. Knocked those coaches right off the track. 200 miles an hour that wind blew. A
tidal wave, 12 feet high, went right across the key. Whole towns were wiped out. Miles and miles of track were ripped up and washed away. Nothing was left. More than 500 bodies were recovered after the storm. And for months afterwards, corpses were found in the mangrove swamps.
The mobsters look around, startled. Frank grins slyly.
You don't like it, do you, Rocco, the storm? Show it your gun, why don't you? If it doesn't stop, shoot it.
Rocco hesitates, looks at them nervously, then walks away.
So the Republic votes out prohibition. That's the end of the mobs. Next time it'll be different, though. We learned our lesson, all right. Next time the mobs will get together.
They turn to Mr. Temple, who clasps his hands and shuts his eyes.
Make a big wave. Send it crashing down on us. Destroy us all if need be, but punish him.
Oh, shut up, old man. I'm warning you. Shut up!
Hear me.
Rocco pulls his gun.
I'll kill you, Rocco!
Make a big wave. Send it against us. Take us all, but destroy him.
Rocco!
Frank stands. Rocco shoves the gun in Frank's gut and pulls the trigger. The gun is empty. Rocco looks at the gun, then gapes as the mirror behind the bar trembles. He takes a few steps, then stops. Another chandelier sways behind him. Behind Frank, pictures fall from the wall. A palm tree smashes through a huge window. The mobsters leap up and huddle with the others as the rain pours in on top of them. Outside the massive hotel sits exposed to the waves as torrents of rain feed the churning night sea. Waves sweep over the hotel beach and crash into its elaborate Victorian facade. A palm tree snaps in the wind. Lightning illuminates the driving rain and furious ocean waves. A foaming wall of water smashes against the hotel. On the porch, battered by wind, rain, and punishing surf, 20 Indians crouch together, huddling close. A powerful gust bends a palm tree nearly in half. One of the Osceola brothers bangs on the hotel door.
Mr. Temple!
Later, sheets of rain continue to wash over the hotel as the waves subside. Inside the debris-strewn lobby, the mobsters sit by the staircase and watch Rocco pace. Across the lamp-illuminated room, Gay, Mr. Temple, and Frank listen to the dying winds. Nora sleeps with her head on a low ledge where Frank sits. Frank reaches with his lean hand and gently massages Nora's long hair. She stirs. Nora gazes dreamily into Frank's eyes, then turns her head and listens.
Storm's passing.
Torn shutter or two, some trash on the beach. In a few hours, there'll be little to remind you of what happened tonight.
Will we ever see you again, Frank?
Yeah, the storm. It's passing.
Will we?
Well, I hope so.
Why don't you stay right on here with us, Frank? You're most welcome. Go on, tell him, Nora. If he decides to stay here with us, we'd be most happy. Go on, tell Frank.
Have you any folks?
No.
I'd be proud to have you regard us as your family.
Maybe that isn't what Frank wants.
Oh, I don't mean to set on you, son. Think it over. Don't give your answer right away.
Hey, boss! Hey, boss!
What's that?
The boat's gone!
What?
Rocco and his men run to join Toots outside. Through the rain, they see the dock and the fishing boat, but Rocco's huge yacht is gone. They walk back inside.
He did it. I told him I'd kill him, but he did it just the same.
Maybe he'll come back now the storm's over.
No.
Why not?
Because he believed me when I told him I'd kill him.
Well, what are we going to do,
huh?
We can't stay here.
Can we?
They stare as Gay laughs.
Hey, boss, il soldato.
Che cosa?
Pote navigare in una barca.
Your mistake, sister. We're not in any trouble.
Got something?
There's another boat out there. It ain't much, but it'll get us to Cuba.
Who's going to run it?
Rocco strides confidently to Frank, who leans against a wall.
Him.
The Osceola brothers appear at the door.
Mr. Temple, Mr. Temple, you're not a good man. You don't let nobody in. That's no good.
Tom Osceola.
Tom.
Oh, shut up. Why are you leaving a baby out here in storm? That's no good. You no more friend my brother than me. We don't do like you say anymore. Don't go in we. You're no good friend to Indian.
Tom.
All of the Indians leave.
You told me you sent him away. You lied to me. They were outside my door during the whole storm.
So what?
Well, they might have died out there.
Who cares?
You filth.
What he said, you can run a boat. That's a fact, huh?
His first sweetheart was a boat.
You're taking us to Cuba.
Why should I?
Because you know what'll happen to you if you know.
I won't take you.
You mean you'd rather die than take us?
No, I didn't say that.
Hmm?
You won't kill me because I'm your only chance of getting away from here.
Well, there's other ways of getting at you. Right, Tess?
Right.
Maybe I'm up to them.
Oh, no, you wouldn't be. After a few minutes of toots here, you'd begin to ask yourself questions like, what if I come out of this a cripple? And do I care whether they make their getaway or don't? All your answers would be right ones.
Well, I'm not so sure.
I am. Of course, if you're anxious and want to find out just how good you are at taking it, we'll accommodate you. But let me warn you, Toots hasn't had much practice. Kind of rusty. Might slip. That'd be too bad. Because you made real sense upstairs when you said that one Rocco more or less ain't worth dying for.
They all turn toward the door.
Ziggy!
Yeah.
Mr. Temple!
The law. One wrong word out of anybody that gets it just the same as Sawyer. Understand me, old man?
Mr. Temple bows his head. Rocco faces Nora.
Now, you, sister, let him in.
The others look on solemnly as Nora stiffly climbs the stairs and opens the storm doors. Sheriff Ben Wade enters, his black slicker and sheriff's hat glistening with rain.
Good evening, Miss Temple. I'm looking for Sawyer. Is he here?
No.
Has he been here?
No.
That's funny. He put a call into me from here about 7 o'clock.
Did he?
Yeah. Evening, Temple. Folks.
Yeah.
Pretty good blow, huh?
Yeah.
Did some damage, I see. Power lines are down a couple of places.
How's the road?
Passable. I'm trying to locate Sawyer. Seen him, anybody?
Frank, Nora, and Gay look to each other and hold their breath. Curly avoids the sheriff's stare.
Have you seen Sawyer?
No.
Well, he was here, I know, because he called me from here. About 7 o'clock. I called back a few minutes later. Somebody answered. Was it one of you?
I did.
Well, you were.
I just come down from upstairs when you called. There was nobody around, so I answered. Probably he stopped in to make his call, then he went on and got caught in a storm. He's stalled someplace along the road right now, probably.
Well, he ain't between here and Palm Grove. And he wouldn't have called me unless it was something special. Seen anything of the Osceola brothers? Have you?
No.
I figured that was what it was all about, his call, I mean. The Osceola brothers. A couple Indians busted out of jail and were looking for him.
Oh.
I'll take a run down Matacumba way. If Sawyer shows up, tell him to wait. I'll be back. See you later.
Rocco follows the sheriff outside.
First visit of the Keys, Mr.
Brown.
Yeah. Late in the season for a storm like this. They usually hit the early part of the summer.
Oh, is that so?
Been doing any fishing?
Yeah.
Well, there's no better fishing anywhere than on the Keys. See you later.
Wade climbs over fallen brush lying across the road and back into the rain. Rocco steps onto the porch and watches the sheriff get into his mud-spattered squad car. The headlights turn on, and the sheriff spots something in front of his car. In a muddy puddle in front of the car, a body lies face down. Sheriff Wade gets out of the car and hurries to the body resting in ankle-deep water. He rolls the body over. It's Sawyer. He wrestles the limp body out of the puddle and onto a mud bank. He puts two fingers on Sawyer's muddy neck. Wade glares furiously as Rocco steps over.
It's him! Sawyer! He's murdered!
Well, look, I didn't want to say anything. After all, it's not my business, but those Indians you were talking about, they were here.
Yasiolos?
Yeah, they were here all during the storm. They left only a couple of minutes ago.
Wade pulls out his flashlight from under his slicker and sloshes up the muddy lane. Rocco frowns down at Sawyer's body, then grimly watches the sheriff charge up the dock toward the group of Indians. The light from the sheriff's flashlight illuminates a line of Indian faces, one at a time. The last two faces are the Osceola brothers. They run.
Stop! Stop or I'll shoot!
They bolt. Inside, they hear the shots.
Watch yourselves. Stay in line.
They turn and see Rocco enter calmly. From another door, the sheriff marches in, laying a heavy stare on Mr. Temple. The sheriff stops, standing over Temple, who slumps in his wheelchair.
He's dead.
Your Indians murdered Sawyer. You lied to me, Temple. You said you hadn't seen the Osceolas. You lied, didn't you? I knew Sawyer had been here. That's why he called me. Because he'd found the Osceolas. They thought they could hide it by sinking his body, but they couldn't. The storm tore his body loose and threw it out. Right at your door. And that's where the crime belongs, at your door. You probably knew they killed Sawyer. I wouldn't put it past you. And I'm going to lay charges, naming you as accessory.
What was the shooting?
The Osceolas, they tried to get away. I killed them both.
Temple squeezes his eyes closed and covers his face with his hand. Frank glares at the calm, emotionless Rocco. Frank's eyes well up and he swallows painfully.
Brown, what's your first name?
Howard.
He writes in a notebook.
Address?
Hotel Central, Milwaukee.
How long are you going to be here?
Week.
Wade hesitates and studies Rocco's face.
Haven't I seen you someplace before?
I don't think so.
He turns to Curly.
You.
Hoff. Richard. Hotel Central, Milwaukee.
We're all together.
Your full name?
Frank McCloud, no address.
What you doing here?
Passing through.
Now Toots.
You.
Bass, Edward Bass, Hotel Central, Milwaukee. We're all together.
Suddenly, a square-shouldered man in a trench coat and fedora walks in through the front doors.
How far to Key West? How far to Key West?
About 100 miles.
Some hurricane. Thought it would blow us right out into the ocean. Had to pull up on the road for a couple of hours till it blew over. Some hurricane. I'll be back in the morning.
The sheriff leaves.
Can we get something to eat? Can we?
Rocco follows the sheriff outside. In a second car sit four men dressed like the other in trench coats and fedoras. One of them looks at Rocco's grim face. They watch as Sheriff Wade hoists Sawyer's lifeless body out of the mud and drags it to a squad car. Inside, Toots nods toward the study.
In there, everybody.
Angel slides open the study doors. Gay enters. Nora pushes Mr. Temple in his chair, and Frank follows them. Outside, Rocco frowns and watches Sheriff Wade's car leave. The men in the second car crack smiles and get out to greet Rocco.
Hi, Johnny boy, how are you?
Well, what do you know?
Rocco leads them in.
Hey, boys!
Hiya,
Ziggy!
It's so great to see you again, Johnny Pal.
Well, it sure is, well, Pal.
Hey, Rocco, you put on a little weight.
Well, now, wait a minute. Oh, stop.
Oh, look out.
Rocco pulls off Ziggy's hat and exposes his thinning hair.
Hey, guess who's here?
Who?
Gay! Gay, where are you?
Gay, don't tell me.
Gay enters with an emotionless, glassy stare.
Well, I'll be... Say, she's as pretty as ever.
Yeah.
Ziggy squeezes her arms.
Where you been all the time Johnny was away?
Huh? Around.
If I'd have known that, I'd have tried to beat Johnny's time.
Same old Ziggy, huh? Eh? All right, baby.
Rocco points Gay back into the study.
I know you fellas are in a hurry, huh?
Yeah. Curly.
Rocco's smile sours, and Curly puts a black case on a table. He unlatches the top and opens it. It's stacked with bundled bills. Rocco hands Ziggy a bundle.
Whoa!
Ziggy studies one of the bills in the light of the hurricane lamp.
Babe has a good feel.
One of Ziggy's men approaches. He sets down a black leather bag and his fedora. He studies the bill using a jeweler's loop. Ziggy watches intently. Toots and one of Ziggy's men size each other up.
Lathe works okay. Portrait's good. No breaks in the lines.
Serial numbers check out.
Yeah, that's right.
The man flips the bill over. Ralph and another henchman look each other over.
Back color's okay.
High-class merchandise.
Okay.
Ziggy pulls bundles of real money out of the leather bag and hands them to Rocco. Rocco rapidly fingers through each bundle. Under Curly's watchful eye, Ziggy's expert counts the counterfeit bills. In the study, Gay leans in close to Frank. Nora leans in.
She's right, Frank. Tell them you'll go or they'll hurt you. And then when you get outside in the dark, make a break. Run. Try to get away.
It's your only chance, Bella.
Frank, what are you thinking?
You were right. Your head says one thing and your whole life says another. Your head always loses.
Out there in the dark, make a break for it.
Head says.
Are you going to make a fight of it, Frank?
I got to. Not that one rock among us makes any difference in this world. What I said upstairs still goes. I haven't changed my tune. It's just that I've got to.
Well, if you're a fighter, you can't walk away from a fight. That's the answer, I guess.
The mobsters trade cases and walk to the door.
Here you are, Curly.
Well, Johnny Powell, when are you coming back again?
And it won't be long now.
With you back again, it'll be like old times, huh? You know something?
Yeah?
I bet inside of 2 years we have prohibition back again.
Yeah, only this time it's going to be different.
Right.
The mobs will be together.
Yeah?
No more blasting
you
each other, huh?
Surrounded by their men, Rocco and Ziggy shake hands heartily.
So long, Johnny Pyle.
So long, Ziggy.
Yeah?
See you when.
Yeah.
Rocco slaps Ziggy on the back. Ziggy and his henchmen file slowly out. Flanked by Toots and Ralph, Rocco waves and grins broadly. The car headlights shine, then he turns around and faces his men.
Let's get started. Bring everything down. The soldier stuff, too. Soldier, give Ralph a hand.
Frank emerges from the study.
Coming with us? Yes or no, I'm in a hurry.
Frank stares blankly.
Toots, go to work on him.
Toots smirks and wraps his gleaming chrome pistol in a handkerchief.
You win.
I thought you'd change your mind the last minute.
He walks into the study.
Well, what's the damage, old man?
He throws some money on a table.
Well, that ought to take care of it.
He approaches Nora.
Want to come along, sister?
Stone-faced, Nora stares away as Rocco whispers in her ear and walks away. Nora's piercing eyes fix unwaveringly on Frank's dark, longing gaze. He sighs. On the staircase, Angel and Ralph return with their luggage. They put on their coats and hats. Rocco dons a white fedora and double-breasted suit coat.
Okay, boy.
Gay watches as he releases the empty clip from his pistol and loads a fresh one. He puts his pistol in his jacket pocket. Curly hands him the money bag. With measured steps, Gay slowly approaches Rocco.
Where are my things?
Oh, I've got to tell you, you're not coming.
He hands her money.
Yeah, unless you can stay drunk for a month.
Johnny, please take me with you.
No, get away.
You got to, Johnny, you got to.
Oh,
please.
Come on.
I'll stop drinking. I'll do anything, only take me with you. Please, Johnny, I love you. I need you. I'll kill myself. I will. Johnny, please. Please. Listen, I'll be good luck to you like I was before. I won't let you go without me. You've got to take me with you. You've got to. You've got to.
Rocco shoves her off. Gay passes close to Frank and slyly hands him Rocco's pistol. He quickly covers it with his hat and looks back to Nora.
Get going, soldier.
Frank grabs his bag and turns to leave.
Good luck, son.
Yeah, good luck.
They watch as Frank and Toots follow the others out the door. Outside, dark clouds are illuminated by flashes of lightning. Gay and Nora race to the door and watch anxiously. Frank and Toots join the mobsters and walk up the debris-strewn dock.
Run, Ellie, run. Run, Phil, run. Why doesn't he run?
They watch as Ralph and Angel help Rocco into the fishing boat, which sways in the churning sea. Frank and Toots follow behind. Frank steps off the dock into the boat and Toots follows. Ralph is the last to board. Shrouded in darkness and surrounded by the mobsters, Frank flicks on the compass light. He switches on the light for the gauges and checks their readings. He turns the key. Frank grimaces and checks the gauges again as Rocco watches carefully. The motor starts and Rocco's tense face relaxes. Frank grips the steering wheel, switches off the gauge lights, and turns to Angel and Ralph.
You cast off that bow line. Stand by that stern line.
Ralph and Angel move to release the mooring lines as a lightning flash illuminates the boat.
Okay, let it go.
The men toss the lines to the dock. Frank squints out at the dark horizon and works the wheel against the steady waves. The mobsters all take positions around him. Another lightning flash illuminates the name on the boat's stern, Santana. On shore, the women look on helplessly from the doorway as the boat slips away across the sea. They hang their heads and return to the lobby. Nora rubs her arms against a sudden chill. Gay creases her brow and pouts.
Chance. He didn't take it. He should have run.
Mr. Temple tries cranking the phone.
Lines are dead.
He hangs up the earpiece and rolls over to Nora. She approaches him slowly, then drops to her knees and places her head in his lap. He pats her head soothingly. The scene fades to a dark, foggy sea. The Santana comes into view. On board, Frank keeps a sharp eye ahead and works the steering wheel. The cabin door opens, and Curly emerges wearing a black fedora and suit coat. Frank sighs as he approaches.
How are we doing?
Right on course.
I'll keep us that way.
Curly scowls and joins Ralph in the stern. Beside them, Toots hangs his head over the side of the boat. Curly smiles and pats him on the back.
How you feeling, Toot?
Oh, I feel awful.
Well, why don't you go downstairs?
It's too hot down there. What time is it?
A little after four. We're not halfway there yet.
Johnny sleeping?
Yeah.
Toots lowers his queasy head. Curly walks back over to Frank and suspiciously checks the compass heading as Frank takes a drag off a cigarette. He descends the stairs, keeping his eyes on Frank. In the cabin below, Curly joins Rocco and Angel, who lounge on the bunks and listen to the marine radio. Rocco puffs on the stub
Don't
of a cigar.
Get it, man, Roger. Numeral 022400Z. Man, Roger, X-ray, George. Group numerals 4-5. Missing fishing boat, Santana, is being taken to Cuba. X-ray. Cease search of Area B immediately. X-ray.
Is us there talking
Santana
about on the radio?
Well, I'll let out.
Fog like this, they couldn't find the Queen Mary.
Rocco stretches out.
Hey, Curly.
X-ray.
What time is it?
X-ray. A little after four.
Break. Numeral zero.
Say, Johnny.
Yeah?
I've been thinking.
Yeah?
About Gay.
What about her?
You think it was such a good idea not to bring her? She's pretty sore.
Yeah, so she's sore.
Yeah, but she might squeal. Just for spite. On Ziggy, I mean.
Rocco pulls out his cigar.
Well?
Curly breaks into a smile.
Oh. I get it. There's only one Johnny.
Up above, Frank's cigarette dangles from his lips. He pulls it out and flicks it away. He slowly looks behind him. Ralph stares right back at him with his hand on his holster, while Toots hunches over the boat railing. Frank turns back to the wheel, pulls Rocco's gun out of his jacket pocket, and cocks it. He yanks at the throttle. He looks back at Ralph.
Hey, you. Take a look over the stern, see if we picked up any kelp.
Ralph eyes him suspiciously for a moment, then climbs up to a fishing chair and leans out over the stern. Toots raises his weary head.
I feel awful.
Frank watches Ralph lean out over the transom. The motor starts back up. Frank spins the wheel and the boat turns abruptly, tossing Ralph overboard. Toots sways uneasily. Toots snaps to and reaches for his gun. Frank blasts him. In the cabin, the men jump up. Toots shoots through his coat pocket. Frank spins and grabs his side. Toots drops into a seat, staring wide-eyed at Frank, then collapses and rolls onto the deck. Frank scrambles to Toots and grabs his gun. Curly appears in the doorway. Frank shoots. Curly reaches for his chest and turns back. Frank hurries up the railing and climbs on top of the roof above the helm. He pulls off a sunroof cover and peers down at the cabin door. Below, Curly staggers in.
Curly.
What's the matter?
His face in agony, Curly stumbles onto a bunk.
Curly.
Rocco heads for the stairs and grabs for his pockets. He looks at Angel, bewildered.
My gun. It's gone.
Okay.
He pries a revolver from Curly's hand and stands at the bottom of the stairs.
Touch. Ralph? Soldier. Hey there, soldier!
Frank watches from his hidden
soldier.
Perch. Rocco looks to Angel in disbelief, then walks back to his fallen friend.
Curly.
He turns back to Angel, who waits nervously by the stairs.
Angel, you go up.
Huh?
Go on, you hear me?
I'd be killed.
Gonna go up there? Are you? Well, there's nothing to be afraid of. Chuck's killed him. He's dead.
Then you go, Chuck.
Angel grimaces, then crumples to the floor. Frank winces at the shot. Rocco returns to the stairs.
Soldier, listen to me. Angel and Curly are dead. They're just me and you. From now on, we'll be partners. Everything will be 50-50. What do you say? Can you hear me? What do you say? Is it a deal?
Lying still, Frank trains his gun on the empty doorway.
I know what you're thinking. You get rid of me and have all the money for yourself. Is that it? Is it? Answer me! I'll tell you what. Suppose I say the money is yours. Yeah.
He gets the money bag.
Here, look.
He tosses the bag up to the deck.
It's yours. All yours, soldier. Plenty more when we get to Cuba. Okay, soldier? You hear me? I'll make you rich.
Soldier! Soldier!
Frank grins.
You're not big enough to do this to Rocco. I'll kill you! You'll never bring me in, never! Look, soldier. I know what it is. You figure I got a gun, so you can't trust me. Right? Okay.
He stoops to pick up Angel's gun, then tosses it up beside the bag.
Look. There? I'm leveling with you. Okay, soldier? I'm coming out. Okay, soldier? I got no gun and I'm coming out.
Rocco climbs onto the deck.
Soldier!
Frank spots Rocco's gun and shoots. Rocco drops, then lurches up and aims at Frank. Frank fires. Rocco rises again. Frank finishes him. Face down, Rocco crumples over the bag and the gun. Frank carefully climbs back down to the helm and grabs his wounded side. He steadies himself at the controls. With his other hand, he spins the wheel and steers the boat around. The compass spins away from south. Frank attaches a rope to a knob on the wheel. The compass bobs and holds at due north. He descends into the cabin and pauses to look at Curly's and Angel's bodies. He places his revolver on the radio. Adjusting the radio's settings, he lifts the receiver to his mouth.
Mayday! 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 Calling Nan Mike Abel. Calling Nan Mike Abel. This is Abel Sugar Abel Nan. Abel Sugar Abel Nan. Calling Nan Mike Abel. Calling Nan Mike Abel. Come in, please.
This is Nan Mike Abel. This is Nan Mike Abel. Go ahead.
This is Abel Sugar Abel Nan. The Santana. My name is Frank McLeod. I'm about 12 miles off Boot Key Harbor on my way in. Over.
Are you all right? Are you all right? Over.
Yes. But I need medical attention. Over.
Continue on course. Stand by on this frequency.
I'm standing by. Will you put me through to the Largo Hotel?
In the hotel, Wade addresses Nora, Gay, and Mr. Temple.
State police picked up that fellow Ziggy and his men crossing into Georgia. You'll have to go up and identify him, miss.
Gay stands.
Mr. Temple, I'm mighty grateful to you for saving my life and all, but those two boys, the Osceolas, I'd rather been killed than have innocent blood on my hands.
Oh, I'm the one to blame. If they hadn't trusted me, they wouldn't have turned up here and they'd still be alive. It seems we can't do anything but harm to those people even when we go to help them.
No, Mr. Temple, it wasn't you. It wasn't the law or anybody. It was only Johnny Rocco. Nobody in the whole world is safe as long as he's alive.
We better go, miss.
Sheriff Wade leads Gay out. Nora sits with her head down, and Mr. Temple rests his chin heavily on his chest. Nora lifts her head, takes a few steps, then hurries to the phone.
Hotel Largo.
She smiles.
Frank.
As she listens, her chest heaves and her eyes widen with joy.
Oh, thank God.
Nora trembles slightly and stays riveted to the earpiece. She hangs up. Nora sets the phone down and slowly walks to Mr. Temple, wringing her hands with a faraway look in her eyes.
right, Dad. He's coming back to us.
Temple grins. Nora steps to a window, opens the shades, and pushes out the shutters. Brilliant beams of sunlight flood the dark room. Our view fades into the foggy sea where the Santana cuts through the haze. At the helm, Frank, with his suit collar upturned, grins broadly as he pilots the boat back home. Titles appear. The End, a Warner Brothers First National Picture.